As always, subscribe and click the notification bell on our YouTube channel. Be active on our Facebook group, East Coast Distressed Note Investing, and be sure to go to our website for all your note investing tools, resources, and available assets. If you have any questions, email us at tradedesk@jkpholdings.com.
Welcome, everybody, to the Real Estate Note Show. I'm Dave Putz from JKP Holdings. Alongside me, as always, Mr. Nathan Turner.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Today, we're diving into the idea of originating and buying commercial notes.
Yeah.
And before we get there, let's just catch up for a minute for those who may not know us. We're both note buyers, per se. And for us, our experience in this note business has been vast on the buying side of real estate notes, originating from banks and whatnot. So, Nathan, what would you say is a big difference between buying the bank-originated notes and getting involved in this commercial seller finance notes? What are the biggest differences you're finding we've found in the last year plus?
So, yeah, like you say, we've been buying bank notes forever. And then now we've kind of transitioned a little bit, I want to say, over to seller finance. I think one of the biggest differences is just the paperwork. The bank stuff generally is pretty clean. There may be some missing assignments. And actually, that's another difference now that I think about it. But there might be some missing collateral. There might be some missing documents. But the paperwork itself is really clean. And with the seller finance, first of all, my experience has been there might be one assignment in between there. So way fewer assignments to be tracking, which is a pretty big deal. You and I both have our share of chasing collateral. But generally, the paperwork's maybe not quite as clean. It takes a little bit more scrutiny when you're going through those documents just to make sure it's what we think it is.
Absolutely. And I think for us, we got used to one set of things happening, and we've shifted throughout the years from that typical bank note, clean cut, just dealing with the launches and assignments, to understanding what this whole world of owner finances and originations are. So we're better buyers of that same paper.
Right. Yeah. And it's been interesting, you know, like, you know, my history where I started doing seller finance, and my paper was just as ugly, if not uglier, than some of the stuff we're seeing.
Yeah.
True. Where I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I was writing up a contract to the best of my knowledge and ability, but it wasn't correct. And as I learned more and as I experienced more, I got cleaner and better, and now I'm satisfied where it's at. And so it's kind of interesting going back to that now and seeing some of that same kind of paper coming through.
Yeah. And I'm going to share with everyone in the comments on here, and I'll share it on the YouTube channel when this is being recorded. This will be on our podcast as well as our YouTube channel. Nathan and I run a awesome class for those who are originating paper, who want to be interested in selling it to note buyers. And we teach those originators what makes a note valuable and what criteria note buyers are looking for. So you guys do make quality notes to sell if you choose to or need to in the future.
And, you know, I honestly think we're making an impact from all the people we've been speaking to.
Yeah.
I'm seeing that. You know, I actually talked to a guy that's creating notes out in North Carolina. And when I met him a year ago, he's like, Armalo, you know, and now he is going through an Armalo, and he's kind of cleaned up on the origination side what he's building. And it makes it much more attractive for note buyers.
Absolutely. So we definitely encourage you guys, if you are originating it, please jump in. I post a link to the website, which will get you into Zoom calls and whatnot. We're having one Wednesday night, which we'll be talking about. Also, before we dive into our awesome guests we have going on today, Nathan, share with those who may not know us about this conference that's coming up in May.
Yeah. Oh, man. The closer it gets, the more excited I get.
I know.
And I know we're still a few months out, but man, it's going to be so good. We're just looking over kind of a preliminary schedule of speakers. And man, it's going to be really good. I've got you lined up. Yeah. I've got me lined up. I've got a bunch of people that we know. I won't spill the beans too early, but we've got some really great speakers coming up, as well as
and
some
this is for those
really
who are
fun things.
Buying notes as well as originating, putting them both in the same room.
Exactly.
And I think that, besides the speakers, is probably the second awesomest thing that people who are originating are going to be able to have people who they look up to speaking on stage.
Absolutely.
We found, weirdly enough, that those people who are doing rap notes, originating notes, don't have a conference.
Right.
You can join in and take a look at it, as well as meet other note buyers who, right at your same table, could be buying your notes.
Yeah. And just looking over, like, really, it's almost 50-50, where it's kind of the traditional, what we're used to, and seller finance. And so we're incorporating a lot of that coming in, a lot of speakers, a lot of originators that are actually doing this, that all walks can relate to. So whether you're originating paper, you're buying property and selling it on terms, creative finance, whatever, we've got that covered, and people that can speak to that, as well as the note buyers. And man, oh man, we're going to make a lot of business coming together. It's exciting.
Yeah. Last year's, we had a couple of deals actually happen that weekend, which most conferences that never happen. So excited about that.
Perfect. Yeah. So, if people don't know, it's the Diversified Mortgage Expo, and it's coming up May 31st, June 1st in Nashville. And cannot wait to see everybody. It's going to be a really great conference.
It'll be great. So those who haven't signed up for it, please go to the website and you'll find it. If you can't find it, have problems, feel free to reach out to us to learn more. So when we get back to the idea of originating, buying commercial notes, we're going to cover today the idea of what is a commercial note? What does it mean to originate it? What's the differences? How do you find it? How do you possibly, if you're looking to buy it, stuff like that. And in the next couple of weeks, we'll be talking to more people who are doing this stuff. I mean, today we're just going to talk about the overall line of what is this stuff? How do you originate it correctly? What do you do to make it safe? Nathan, I'm sure you've seen paper that's not written well and not originated
sure
well.
Have.
What are some of the things you know of that could happen if you don't create good paper?
Well, number one, you may not be able to sell it at all. And then if you can sell it, it's not going to be for a great price. There are some really simple ways to structure your note in the first place to make sure it's a very marketable note. And I know a lot of people get into notes where they're originating and their plan is just to hang on to the note forever. Great. What if 2, 3, 5 years down the road, you do decide you want to sell it, you would like a lump sum of cash. Wouldn't it be nice to have that note structured in a way so that you can get top dollar for it? So that's really what we're coming down to, and we're hoping that people get that message.
Absolutely. And I just to remind everyone, this will be recorded. I think you got a comment about that. We do run this show every other Friday. So we'll be back in about 2 weeks. So if you are interested, we'll be talking to another note guy who's been in the space for a long time. So without further ado, let's bring on our guest. Paulo, welcome to our show. We are excited to have you on.
Thank you for inviting me.
Awesome. Can you share a little bit about your background? How'd you get involved in real estate? How'd you go towards this idea of commercial properties? What does it look like? How'd you get started? How'd you get introduced to this space?
Well, I mean, I've been in real estate forever. I'm actually from Italy. I moved to the US around 12 years ago, and I did real estate in Italy. And when we came here, initially I invested in rental properties while working my corporate job. And I just, back then when I came here, cap rates were really good. You could buy for really little, a very good rental property. And I used the build a portfolio of 32 rentals. And then as prices didn't make more sense because prices went up so much, I decided to start lending. And I did a big cash out refi and started this company. And as I lent, I realized that you could make a lot more profit with a more secure when you rent a fix and flips rather than a normal home, because people need it for a shorter amount of time, so they're okay with a much higher rate. And it started working really well, so I kept growing the business.
Awesome.
Interesting. So when we're talking about commercial, this you're going to help us dispel a myth right away here. So when we're talking about commercial notes, we're always talking about strip malls and office space and things like that, right?
Hotels, like massive hotels. Stuff, right?
No, not necessarily at all. Actually, the vast majority of my notes so far have been on houses or small multifamily that have, but the reason why they're commercial is because you're not lending to an individual, you're lending typically to an LLC, but you're lending to a corporation, which has a lot more advantages. And you know, the first advantage is that legally you don't have the same requirements as a lender. There's a much, much lower protection for an LLC. This is actually we decided to really lend in Georgia, as we know the market extremely well. You have really basically no protection as a borrower. If you're an LLC, the law considers a commercial loan, a commercial contract between two entities, and is not particularly protecting one versus the other. So the legislation is not looking at a poor individual with a corporation, is looking at two companies making a contract together. So it doesn't really favor one versus the other. And what you can do, you can still have the personal hook, having them sign a personal guarantee. And you can also, the worst case scenario is somebody does bankruptcy. But if you do a commercial note, you can have them pledge their shares of their entity on top of the property. So you can take over the entity if they try to bankrupt it. So you have, you effectively can take the property very quickly at a crazy speed with this system. The second great advantage is equity. You know, when someone buys a property, they typically either they have a regular mortgage with a little down payment, or you create a seller financing where they can't put as much money down as instead of a real estate investors. Most of our investors have six figures cash bank account in order to, and they have a sizable down payment they need to put down, and they have to have cash reserves, etc. So you have a much higher profile borrower than your typical borrower that you would have. You have instant equity, as you know, investor will buy for a lower price than market because that's their profession. And on top of this, they need to put a down payment. So you have a lower loan to value, and you typically have a higher rate. You have a lot more remedies than a regular loan.
Very interesting. So are these typically short-term loans, like 12, 18 month kind of things?
Yes.
These are 30-year mortgages?
No, because you can flip. They are trying to borrow for really a short period of time. And therefore, you have two advantages. Number one, you're going to have a much higher yield. So all the notes are really going to be double digit. And then the second advantage is they're going to be short term. Yes, they're going to be typically 12 to 24 months, which can be for no buyer a bit of a paperwork because you might get paid very quickly. Mm-hmm. But the nice thing is this allows you not to have all the inflation risk, because now if you get your money back and inflation goes up, you can reset and the rates constantly reset. You can reinvest at whatever is the market rate or the times. So a lot of people have suffered from this past inflation hike, but if you have a note of 12% that matures after a year and maybe gets paid back after 10 months, well, now you've earned that money. And if all of a sudden inflation spikes up a lot, you can now have your next set of notes at a higher rate.
So you mentioned before and about the fact you get double digit yield numbers, right?
Yes.
I'm going to give you a softball here. How about usury law? I mean, usury law says you can only do a cap of a certain interest rate. Is usury law apply here at all?
It does, but it has a different regulation. So for example, for Georgia, which is mainly what we do, for this type of law, usury law is 60%, 6-0. So yes, it would be illegal to have an interest rate of 60, but obviously as we do 12, 13, 11, 10, 15, 18, what other interest we do is well below usury law. Again, they're just not the same legislation that there is for individuals. You also, regarding legislation and other huge advantages, you don't have to have the same type of licensing. There's not as many requirements for like statements or all these laws that make servicing or originating very complex and can add additional risks that forces you to be very careful in this space. A lot, it's not, you don't have all that red tape on commercial. An example is this number that I gave you.
That's so amazing.
I'm curious, like usually when we're looking at a note that we're going to buy, one of the factors we look at is what's the value of the property. And when I'm looking at that, I want to know today's value. So not an after repair. So I think what you're doing is lending more, like you said, to flips. So are you lending on the current value where it has not been repaired, or are you lending on a future value?
So we look at three factors. We look, definitely we look at the future value. So we want to ensure the future value, loan to value. Typically we like less than 75%. And we try to really be conservative and having less than 70%. So now on an as-is value, typically the only way to look at an as-is value on a property to be flipped, they typically need some renovations, and therefore they only bought from investors. So if you try to look at comparable properties, they're all underpriced because they're only properties that an investor base. So they're already discounted. So what you do in that case is we try to be 85% or below. So because there is a margin that the investor will make from buying a distressed property and reselling at retail. So the two ratios are going to be different.
That 75, 70, 85 includes the cost to repair, because you're not going to loan them 85% plus repair costs, right?
Exactly. So what we do is we do not advance all the money to the borrower right away. Mm-hmm. And we will just advance an initial amount in order to ensure that we have a conservative leverage. And then we'll go and give them the money as they have repaired. We're going to give them the second part of the loan. So for example, if there is a property, for simple numbers, that is worth 100K now, and it's going to be worth 200K once it's done. And we're giving a portion of the loan. Maybe we'll give them 80K now on the loan, and then we'll give them a little more. We might give them another 50K after they've done the renovation.
And how do you manage that renovation? How do you manage that situation where, you know, they finish the roof or they finish a kitchen? Are you going to the house and looking at it?
Right? Well, this is another stream of revenue for us. That's probably a lot why we stay here locally, because we have people in the field that will go out, and we can charge the customer an additional fee for the person to go out and do a report. So typically what we do, well, in this case, you know, you could think it in two ways, maybe for the audience. One, you can really, if you know construction well and real estate investment well, you can build your own business this way. And now what you have is you have a lot of security, and you have a lot of income, and you do not need to run all the risks of the flippers. That's one way to do it. And if you would ever like to flip houses, you'd know that if you ever get back the asset, then you can finish it up and make a lot more money, because you're effectively investing in the notes a fraction of what the flipper is investing. Another way to do it is, you know, if you buy a note from me or from any of my or other people that do this, typically we'll all service it for you. So you'll get the draw reports, you'll get everything, and this will be completely managed for you.
Wow. And then you're handling all that escrow money. It sounds like, are you servicing all this yourself, or you have outside people helping you manage it?
So I have outside people that work for me managing it. So, you know, we have approximately 80 notes right now on our either on our books or that we have sold, and we are all managing them. So we have field people that will go and give us a draw report with pictures and reconciling the scope of work and the escrow.
Okay. And then, so you mentioned this already, but this is, I think, a huge highlight is because it's a commercial note, you're going, it's B2B. So Dodd-Frank does not apply.
Does like, not apply.
There are no rules there. And even like you said, you're in Georgia. And I double checked this, and you're right. But again, because it's B2B, Georgia usually has requirements about needing a debt collector's license. But because it's B2B, that does not apply either.
Correct.
You hear that, note buyers? We're always worried about debt collection being a huge, because for those who don't know, typically when you create a note, even if you buy a note in certain states like Georgia, you have to have a debt license. But when you're doing a business, you're in a different realm of
exactly.
It. Mm-hmm. And you can do all this without a debt license. This is awesome.
And yeah, it you know, if you are, there are many other type of loans that we do that are not necessarily for flippers. So you could have situations where someone just needs, for example, a bridge loan where they are an investor. They maybe are setting up an Airbnb. And mm-hmm. they can't get a loan, a regular bank loan, till they have some history in Airbnb. So we can give them a loan for the 12 months, typically, that is needed in order to create that history. But again, you on the loan like this will probably go 70% loan to value. So you have a very secure, nice property. This is already cash flowing. Other cases are some people sometimes have a short-term need for cash in order to buy quickly some properties, and you can cross collateralize among a lot of the rentals, and the old in these cases having a rent rider, which basically means that you can, if they don't pay the mortgage, don't even have to foreclose on them. You can just start collecting the rent. And the rent, you just make sure that the rent will cover more than a mortgage, and to give another remedy there. So there's a lot of different type of notes, again, that you can have with very interesting rates, and you have a lot of freedom to structure it in a way that is a win-win situation.
Awesome. So then just reminded, someone asked what commercial note is. This is talking about a note that's a business-to-business transaction. And whatnot. And this will all be a replay on YouTube and our podcast. So if you get lost, let us know and just take a look at that. We had a question regarding what's your concerns on the fact that a lot of people have fears of repairs and properties and stuff like crashing. Do you have a lot of defaults? How is that? What's going on your world for that?
Okay. Well, there are some situations. Well, first of all, I never just yet had a property that actually was fully foreclosed, but we did have we do have approximately a little, you know, 3-5% of the loans where there is some type of delay, maybe of a week or a few days or something. So the main concern can be of to your point, what if something happens that was not predicted at the beginning? Well, number one, we ensure that the borrower has enough cash to sustain 10 to 20% extra expenses on the budget. Secondly, on extensive budgets, so on simple budgets where they just have to change kitchen, change flooring, or painting the house, they're very simple. We just require that. more complex, if they do some additions, etc., we actually already include a contingency of 5, 10, or 15% depending on the project. So we kind of know statistically that there is a certain amount that needs to be reserved for. And then, you know, if you, as mentioned before, we do have a very conservative loan to value. So we have had a couple of cases of we have had two cases where there was a major foundation issue where they actually were do extensive amount of work, but you know, because we ensure that they had the expertise, the cash, we typically have cross-collateralized other properties with that. Then if we were very conservative, they still went through okay. And you know, from time to time, we have given, you know, we also give them good referrals, and we also have other customers of ours that are GCs, that are contractors. So we have kind of a local community. We know the municipalities very, very well. So we have neither, while this stuff can happen, between the reserves, the resources that we can give them, and the conservative valuation that we do, we never had to really foreclose.
Okay.
Very interesting. So now the question for all these greedy note buyers out there, these sound pretty great. And it sounds like there's a lot of opportunity there. Are you selling any of these loans?
Yeah. So sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm selling loans. How we operate is we have a limited amount of capital that we use in order to originate a note right away. And then we try to sell it. Now, sometimes the note pays fast enough, or sometimes we do loans that are very, very short term, but otherwise our business counts on selling around 80% of what we originate.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is, when you say you can sell an 80%, you create a note at say 12, 13%, you can sell that at 80%. Hear this, note buyers, this idea that you can buy a 13% yielding note at 80%.
No, right? That's not what I said. I said, you know, around, let's say four notes out of five, we sell. Yeah.
Okay.
Notes out of five, we sell, and one stays in the balance sheet. Typically do is, yes, we will sell the notes at par. And typically what people will want to do is, we can completely service the note for them if we want to.
Does that look like to service a note? Because I'm going to say most note buyers, me and Nathan said this before, we're lazy, right? Mm-hmm. We have to manage the rehab, manage that stuff. You're saying that if we bought that note from you at 14%, whatever it's at, that you'll continue to maintain that when we service the property?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I continue servicing. And one other thing that we do, it's much more manageable on commercial notes. It's when we have a larger note, we actually fractionalize it. So what that means is at times you have money that you would like to invest. You don't have, it's hard to match dollar for dollar, especially for people that have an IRA account that therefore is locked. They might have $42,577 in it. And they will always have unutilized cash because of that. Instead, if you buy a participation in a note on a fraction on a note, we can also manage that for you. So you can buy just a percentage of the note, we'll retain the rest of the note, and we can just pay you proportionally for your note. You could also go as far as decide to differentiate your investment. And instead of buying one note, you might want to invest in 10% of 10 notes. And that would allow you to have not only fully serviced, but it will allow you to have diversification of your risk without having to go in a fund, which you don't really have any say what's happening next. You can choose the notes you want. You can choose how much you would like to invest.
Wow. For those who want to be passive, it's an opportunity. What typical yield are you offering to those people who want to get some money rolling?
10-11%, okay. Something there, netted of, you know, my servicing fees, and yeah, that's it. And then if they know, on one end, they know that probably they'll get the money back much sooner than in other places, but there will be always other notes for them to invest in.
Okay. And are you only doing this in Georgia? Or are you doing other states?
Well, I would say probably 95% is in Georgia. There are two reasons. Number one, we know the collateral extremely well, and okay. We also have a lot of local resources. And, you know, if there is ever a situation where there is a distress situation, we can always have another customer of ours that will buy that property. So that's another mediation that we have very often. Something happens to the borrower, is a good property, is a good project. The borrower feels like it's too much for them, or something happens to them, we can sell it. So because of this, we create a lot of efficiency, and we're really retaining Georgia. Secondly, Georgia is really a great state. If you need to foreclose, you can literally foreclose as a non-judicial in 2 months. Mm-hmm. And then you get a property with a lot of equity. So that we know how to manage at that point. Never happened, but if it were to happen, we can manage it very well. And we can manage it locally with our own resources. Yeah. So we stay in Georgia. I would say 95% in Georgia, probably 90% in Atlanta.
Okay. Georgia's a great state to foreclose in because of the short period of time. It just for note buyers who buy residential, you have to worry about having a debt license. So that's awesome. Now, when you're how are you finding these assets? How are you finding these people who need money to fix up a property?
Well, they really have a lot of word of mouth because we close very quickly. So very often they, in order to close quickly and close on properties that need a rehab, they can't get a regular loan. The banks will not finance a loan. They will not finance rehabs, et cetera. So there's a lot of word of mouth. And as the word of mouth goes, you know, obviously we have some competition. And so what we do is we will adjust and kind of customize note by note a little bit of our products in order to match what the need is. But how we find it has been really word of mouth. As we started the business and we started with some marketing, the response was so overwhelming that we had to stop. We didn't have enough money. That's why we started selling notes. But even with that, we're growing, but we cannot afford to have more volume than we're already having.
So I'm curious how you, like, it seems like it's almost kind of a hybrid between a first and a second in the due diligence phase. Because on a first, generally, we're just looking at the property. Like, I'm much more concerned on the value of the property, making sure there's equity. And on a second, you're much more interested in the borrower, making sure that they have the ability to pay and kind of that history. And it seems like these shorter term notes is a bit of a hybrid where, yes, we're interested in the equity and value, but we're also looking at the borrower and looking at their ability and track record or something. So how do you do that? Like, am I right? Are you looking at both things?
Oh, absolutely. So definitely the value is very important. Now on, we do look at the credit. We do run LexisNexis background check, but we also look at the prior projects they did. So typically some of the issues or repairs or gaps in the scope of work or not doing the correct valuation are really done by newbies. And so with that in mind, we will look at the projects they have done before, and we're very careful to land to people that didn't do flips before or didn't do a similar project or didn't do an Airbnb before. That case, we really cherry pick the deals to only the people that can bring even more cash to close, that have even a higher credit and a lower leverage. But yes, we definitely look at the person both on their credit and background check as well as their experience.
So you're pulling personal credit, you're pulling personal W-2s. You're not just based off the company, you're doing it based off the property as well as that borrower. And are you, if it's a partnership, are you getting personal guarantees from them and their spouses, or how do you kind of ensure your safety on that?
Okay, well, we definitely get personal guarantees from the majority members. So typically they will be on. We do not necessarily look at W-2s because we want them to already have all the cash needed to do the project, because the interest payments at this yield are going to be very hard to be sustained in the long term. So and very often these people are professional flippers. So they do multiple projects. That's their full time. So they don't have a W-2, but they do have an experience of all the projects they've done and how much they earned. So we typically do not, unless we have cross-collateralized with rentals that have a good rent history, and then we can count on the fact that we can collect rent ourselves for them. But otherwise, they need to have all the cash up front in order to sustain all the financial obligations. And they need to have enough experience to demonstrate to us they can finish the project. That's typically how it works. Now, other exceptions can be maybe if there is an apartment building, then, well, that's, again, is rental, and we know that after they do some fixes, they could start renting very quickly after 3 or 4 months. So we might be okay with them having just enough cash for 2 to 3 months, and then knowing that some of the rent will come in. But in general, they need to have all the cash up front demonstrated.
Awesome. What's been your biggest worst situation you've been through with a property? What was a story that you kind of shake your head and say, I've learned a good lesson from it?
I'll give you two. Okay, So one of them has been, this happened twice. I went into a meeting to discuss the loan with, in both cases, were two ladies, and they were there with their husbands. And the lady appeared, the two wives appeared, this was two separate loans, appeared to be just the only borrower. And and the husband was not involved. And in reality, that was not the case. And what I found out later is that the wife had the good credit and her husband wanted to really run the project. And because the wives were the only, in fact, you know, one person in my team did tell me, there was her main job was a delivery nurse for babies. And then she's like, you know, this colleague of mine said, it's weird that she doesn't look like the type of construction person. And sure enough, her husband started running everything. And even though she signed a personal guarantee, she had a perfect credit, she had the cash, etc. Her husband started running everything, and he was definitely a person that was not a good borrower, very difficult to work with, and some criminal past and things of that nature. So I had to deal with a very, very rough capital situations when, he had a scope creep and he wanted me to do a loan modification to cover that scope creep, and I said no. So that was kind of a very stressful story. Very similarly happened to with another loan, a very difficult person to work with. It just appeared out of the woodworks right after. So the rule there for now has been whoever participates to an initial meeting, we typically have a Zoom call with our borrowers to go through the project. Whoever is in there, we want to run them all, because obviously whoever is in there has an interest in the transaction.
What's been your best story or best return?
Oh, I've had one 2 weeks ago. Well, we charge points. So, you know, we charge points, and someone needed for a very large apartment building to lock a certain rate. And, you know, this is, we're talking about a downtown $100 million building, and they needed 300K to lock a rate before it closes. So I gave them for 4.5 points, up to 4.5% fee for on 300K for 10 days, and they gave it back. And it was secured by, in this case, was secured by a true commercial property. They own a plaza with a Walmart on. So it was, you know, I would have, it was, those
be one of my best. I guess the interest doesn't matter, but what do you charge interest rate wise? Because 10 days is zero interest, really, but
25%. Well, I did charge 25% in that case. So in that
25%
case,
25% and 4.5.
Yes.
Woo-wee. Nice.
And yeah, well, they needed the money really quickly.
Yeah.
And I did that. And yeah, so it does matter on 10 days. That is another 1%.
Nice.
That's probably my best loan. That's probably my best loan.
That's amazing. That's awesome. So it's amazing, you know, that this world is out there, and those who are interested in learning it, you definitely reach out to Paolo and he'll answer any questions. If you're a note buyer and looking and curious to buy these loans and have him manage it for you, definitely look at that. If you are interested in even investing in it, Paolo has some other opportunities for you guys. Feel free to use his contact information to reach out and find out more about that stuff. We're not going to talk publicly about that for obvious reasons, but Nathan, I'll let you go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, we're always looking for, you know, what's coming up next. And you've got kind of an interesting perspective on real estate in general. And so I'm curious, what do you see coming down the pipe? Like, there's all kinds of predictions out there, so we're looking for yours. What do you see?
On the real estate valuations or are they okay? So down the pipe, I believe that the prices will not immediately spike up. I think what's happening now at a macro level is that when COVID happened, the government took a lot more debt. And really, in order to get out of debt, you have three opportunities. Mm-hmm. You can either increase taxes, which is very unpopular. You can lower government spending, which effectively is not going to happen. The third option is to print money. So that is a lot of people expected the Fed rate to cut rates. That did not happen. We're at a historical high of Fed rates. So I believe that low interest rates are not going to come back very soon. So contrary to other predictions, what that means is that there is going to be a bit of a stagnation in general on markets. However, what COVID did also at change the demand and offer on macroeconomies. So there is there are some areas that obviously have had a lot of certain places. California had an exodus because of the expense of living. Some other places in Florida or in Atlanta, for that matter, had a lot of influx of people on where is a better quality of life or lower cost of living. So with that means is there is a local demand offer imbalance in certain areas that where if there are just certain areas in Atlanta, there's just not enough houses to meet the total demand that therefore that puts pressure on the prices. So my belief is that the prices will go that will remain stable or stagnate. So my belief will be prices up 0 to 3% in the next per year, next on average, next 2 to 3 years, with the rates going to stay, will lower just a tad. Now, a lot of the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac rate a lower rates and rate cuts, that's why they went down. But if they don't materialize as much, they will remain where they're at. And I believe that locally, there will be some changes. As far as the mortgages themselves, I believe that the unemployment has been at the all-time low. And, you know, for several factors, I believe the unemployment will go a tad higher, making a little harder. So I believe that's a good thing for people that are looking at loans for rentals. Might be a little different for people maybe that are looking for traditional Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, but a lot of the people probably in the conference are looking for alternative loans for individuals that therefore should be a little better as the unemployment is going to creep up. As far as my own, the space where we work in, I believe there is a constant transformation. We have a more and more Wall Street backed, this is a secret, if you will, on this loans that is coming out. So slowly, some of Wall Street companies are coming in our space, but there is going to be always space for more and more specialized and niche products that will continue to be profitable. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That was great. We had an additional question from Mario. Where do you think the best lending opportunities for commercial in the future, 6 months to a year, where do you think the best lending opportunities are? Is it to rehabbers or a different angle that you're seeing coming around?
Well, this is a fair, there is a space to really look at, and which might sound unpopular, but as a lot of people know, you need to fear when everybody's excited, and you need to be greedy when everybody fears.
Yeah.
So office spaces right now, if you have a good building on office, maybe the build costs $20 million and you used to trade at $35 million, now you can buy for two or one. And so there are, on the flip side, because the e-commerce, there is a lot of, there is still demand of small suites. So there's a whole new and a mailing address. So there's a whole opportunity for investors to buy an office for $1 million, divide it in suites, rent it, and because the cash flow alone, then that building will be worth $4 to $5 million.
Yeah.
And in that space, no one is lending. So with that example, you might can lend $500,000. And you can fractionalize to many investors on a building that used to be worth 32 and is going to be worth five, and today is worth $1 million, and you have no competition. And therefore, you can charge what are the rates you want, what are the points you want. And you know, if you take back the property, there's still a very good market to go a fractionalize. So, because you're really buying something at 5 cents on the dollar or at three cents on the dollar, it's so low. That you know, the reality is because the cost of construction is $20 million. They will not buy, they will not construct any new office building for the next 20 years. And because of that, eventually the office building will increase in value. So there is also a lot of projects that you can do that are done from office building into another asset class, for example, apartment buildings.
Yeah.
So for those projects, again, there's no one financing it today. So you can go to a loan to value of 20% with an interest rate of 15 or 17 and 5 points on something because no one else is doing. So that is a huge opportunity that is greatly overlooked
That's
today.
That's awesome. Good nugget.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, well, Paul, we appreciate you joining us on this Friday afternoon, and hopefully you're enjoying. What part are you? Are you in Georgia?
Yes, I'm in Atlanta.
You're in Atlanta. Awesome. Well, guys, feel free to reach out to Paulo. It's amazing to have someone that's experience and knowledge in that whole new realm. We met him at the Node Expo last year, and it's been awesome to talk with him, and his knowledge is first class. So feel free to reach out to him. The information's in the link. And Paulo, again, I appreciate you joining me, Nathan, on this great week.
Yeah.
If you have any other questions, let us know.